Oh, you bumbling boob. This is Skeletor, and you're listening to the Talk To Me podcast. Beast Man, put down that... Ah, boy.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 112, and the guest this week is the return of our good friend Jason T. Smith. You know him from Thrift Hunters on Spike TV. He also does the thrifting board and thrifty business with J&A, all that fun stuff. One of my oldest and dearest friends from the podcast, and it's going to be great to have him on. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined once again. You guys are all the haters out there. Sorry, but John Drake is with us once again.
I'm back, y'all.
Oh, man. So what's going on, John Drake?
Not too much. Just in a shit mood.
Yeah, well, and, I'd be in a shit mood, too, if I was waiting on Browns season tickets.
You know, I told you in text message, you better watch it because we're playing your Titans this year. And if you lose, you are going to be miserable when dealing with me because I'm telling you, I will not stop mentioning it during the next episode we record after that game.
I still think it's that you haven't brought up the fact that Johnny Manziel won two games in the NFL and one of them was against the Titans.
Oh, well, I forgot until you just mentioned that, but I'm one of those rare Browns fans that thinks that he was actually showing improvement as he played more, so I'm not one of those, yeah, Johnny's the worst thing ever. So, you know, he was a little dude, he was cocky, and I was like, I liked him. You know, he was a jerk, but whatever.
Right, right. You know. Well, let's get off the sports talk before all the iPods and phones shut off around the country and around the world.
Exactly.
But no iTunes review this week, so make sure you guys are heading over to iTunes, filling out the nice five-star rating, nice five-star review. It will be read on the next episode of the Talk To Me podcast. And let's go ahead and get through the shout-outs for sharing. That is shout-outs for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. And last week's episode, man, a lot of fun. Two episodes, technically. I didn't realize that I could have put it out as one long episode, but it would have been like 2.5 hours long. So we did the Metallica episode and the talk with Brendan Small, who turned out to be a pretty cool guy, man. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him.
That was a great interview, man. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was never a huge fan of Metalocalypse. I enjoyed it. I watched it a little bit, but I wasn't like a diehard fan. But as with most people that come on this podcast, it's one of those things where I tend to delve into their career a little bit more. And so I went back and actually watched a little bit more of the Metalocalypse and got a little bit more into Death Clock. And I think I actually had a Death Clock shirt at one point, but I'm not sure what happened to that.
All I was going to say is a couple of my buddies are really into that. So I had them tune it in and they thought it was a really good interview. So it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I did. He was on the metal podcast with my good friends Chuck and Godless over there, and when I heard him talking to them, I knew it would be a fun interview to get, and I knew it was kind of available for me, so made it happen. And man, some cool stuff over there. I really loved the comment of Death Clock. We're just if the Kardashians played death metal, I figured that line would have gotten picked up by the blogs, but it never did.
Right.
So for shouting out that episode, for sharing on Facebook and Twitter, we got to give a nice shout out to Rico Kohler, Daniel Terry and Discography Discussion, James C. Harrison, Daniel Chapu, Kenneth Waugh, Eric Moore, Katie Douglas, Rob Shellcross, and drumroll please, Gene Hoagland. out of nowhere shared it, man. That was awesome. When I saw that pop up, I was thoroughly excited about our good friend of the show, Gene Hoagland, sharing the episode.
Got to be doing something right when the atomic clock is spreading the word.
The atomic clock strikes. Talk to me.
Nice. Yep. You know, it's funny. It's a good thing that I didn't. I did some research for the show, you know, when you were interviewing him. But it wasn't until later that I actually like delved into a lot of wiki stuff about it. And that's when I found out that Mark Hamill voiced one of the main characters. And I was like, boy, good thing I didn't know that. I would have asked to be on the interview and been like, what was it like working with Mark Hamill, dude?
Like, yeah, the guest list of that show was crazy. I mean, even like, you know, James Hetfield and just down the line, the guest stars that have been on that show were crazy.
Yeah, they had that on the wiki. I was like, holy crap, look at these guys. There was a ton of them.
Well, Mark Hamill's kind of had that weird career that he's been, you know, been on random stuff like, you know, the Batman stuff, or wasn't he like the voice of the Joker for a long time, stuff like that?
Yeah, he's like, that's basically what he's like. Besides Luke Skywalker, he's most famous for doing the Joker, He's basically like the fan favorite voice that they've had in the last like 30 years or something like that. So,
all right, well, let's get into the go ahead and jump into the Talk to Me cover of the week, and I've got a random one. It's actually a listener suggestion. I think it's kind of ridiculous, but we're gonna get into it. So the band All That Remains did a cover of The Thunder Rolls by Garth Brooks, and I heard it when it came out, and I was kind of like, meh, I don't know, man. And our good friend of the show, Joel Baggett, he sent me a text and said, dude, Talk to Me cover of the week has to be The Thunder Rolls by All That Remains. So I'm going to do it as a tribute to my good friend, Joel Baggett, who I know has listened to every single episode of the Talk to Me podcast. Probably him and me are probably the only two people that have listened to every single episode. So it's pretty crazy, man.
That's dedication.
And this is brought to you by Puck Hockey, puckhockey.com, PUCKHCKY.com. Make sure to head over there, shop till you drop. Use the promo code TALK at checkout for 10% off your entire order. Yes, that is TALK, as in Talk to Me, for 10% off your entire order. So, for the Talk to Me cover of the week this week, we're going to do The Thunder Rolls, as done by All That Remains.
Hey, what's happening? This is Trevor Phipps from Unearth, and you're listening to Talk to Me.
Thunder Roll. Every
right, everybody, let's welcome Jason T. Smith to the line, man. How you been, Jason?
I am dandy. How you doing, Toomey? I haven't talked to you in a little while.
It's been a minute. You know, a little text here and there. But I was actually looking at some numbers today, and you were guest on episode 12 and now episode 112. So congratulations.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of weird. There was no plan there. It just kind of happened that way.
Yeah, it's very strange.
I told him on episode 212, we know exactly who we have to get as a guest.
All right.
And I said so, Geddy Lee, so.
100 weeks, I'll be ready again. That's what's happening. All right, cool. Yeah. I'll see you guys in 2 years. Got to go. Bye-bye.
Put it on your calendar.
So we all know Jason from Thrifty Business with Jay Nay. What's the thrifting show with your mom? What's it called?
Oh, which I just finished, actually. Selling Past Your Expiration Date, Being Thrifty Over 50, and from my TV show on Spike in the United States called Thrift Hunters.
Yeah, that's where I heard of you and found you through all that was Thrift Hunters on Spike, and actually was watching some clips from that the other day, just kind of going down memory lane with old Jason T. Smith.
Aww. were we holding hands and skipping? Was it fun?
A little bit. It's like that meme of like that superhero laying in bed and he's looking at the photo and then you see the photo. And in my version of that, it was Jason T. Smith. So.
Nice.
But the reason I brought you on.
And it got weird.
Yeah, very weird, very weird. So one of the reasons I brought you on this week was the big thing with Chester Bennington's death and memorial service that they had roughly about 100 close friends and family attend. And if you went to the Chester Bennington funeral service, you got a wristband, a program, like a laminate. Like it was like a little package, a little care package of Chester Bennington items. And two of those packages showed up on eBay. And one got up to about almost $55,000. The other one was in the $35,000 range. And then I'm assuming eBay pulled them. I don't really know the logistics of why someone would pull that. But can you shed a little bit of light being, you know, king of eBay and let the listeners know what kind of went down there?
Yeah, so I'll get to that. But let's back up and let's talk about the death of celebrities. And actually, it's something I teach because I have a huge thrifting group on Facebook called the Thrifting Board. We're about 33,000 members right now. And what my job and my goal is, to anyone who wants to sell on eBay, whether it be part-time or a full-time career, I want to help teach them things outside their comfort zone. We all have comfort zones. We all know things. We all collect things. But you don't make a lot of money by just staying in your comfort zone. Normally, you got to move outside. So one of the things I teach is when celebrities die, there's this huge wave of nostalgia that people want to feel. And they feel it by, especially if it's a musician, by buying their music. Like they forgot they didn't own any Michael Jackson or any David Bowie or any Prince. And it really hit home and kind of... I realized it's something I could kind of teach when Michael died, because I really paid attention to everything that happened immediately following Michael Jackson dying, because here's what went down. So the day before Michael died, you could pick up a used Bad or a used Thriller on eBay or Amazon or any other bazillion places to buy music online for about $3 or $4 plus shipping. Michael dies, and so there was two copies of every album in every record store in the country, because they still sold normally, but then they were gone. And then when people went to online, the $3, the $4 Thriller is now worth $50, because the demand way out surpassed the supply. And Sony eventually stopped production on every single thing that they were producing, and they turned all their factories on to Michael Jackson stuff. But there was a couple week period where there was no production of Michael Jackson stuff. I mean, they started to produce it, but it wasn't getting to the stores. So are people like myself and others capitalizing on tragedy? Yeah. I mean, definitely so. But guess what? People get mad at me because I say, hey, sell it high because, you know, people are mourning him. But people don't get mad at Entertainment Tonight for spending a half hour talking about Michael. That's how they paid their bills that night.
Yeah.
You know, Time Magazine, Newsweek, USA Today, their cover story will be Michael Jackson died. That's how they paid the bills that day. No one seems to get mad at them, but that's how they pay the bills. So how I pay my bills is I sell stuff. And I realized watching the whole Michael thing, because the wave, you know, depending on how big a celebrity you are, is how long the wave will last. Michael's Prince, Bowie, they lasted almost a month, whereas, you know, Corey Haim would have lasted about 3 hours.
Right.
And that's not a huge slam on Corey. It's just when you become worldwide status, when you have one name worldwide, there's going to be this bigger arc. And so I started watching the Michael stuff go crazy. And that's when I really started teaching people that when a celebrity, and not doesn't have to be just a musician, can be an actor, can be an author. You know, when J.K. Rowling goes, early pressings of Harry Potter will be insane. Anything signed by her will be insane. And that's just the way it is. That's the way our society is. We worship celebrity. And when a celebrity passes, the way a lot of people mourn is they go buy something.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when Prince died, and I'm one of the biggest Prince fans, my record collection, my CD collection, it was huge, just huge, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces. And I started selling it. I was teaching others to sell it. And I was, and crazy, like promo singles that had one or two songs were getting $100. And people are like, well, I'm not selling them. They're my memories. I'm like, no, the music is your memory, not the round piece of plastic. But here's what's going to happen. In about 6 months, that round piece of plastic that you can sell today for $100, you can buy back for about $8 because it's over.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, it's a smart way to make money. Now, I am very sad that my heroes, the musicians that have brought me joy through my life, all of them have died way too young. Chester, I just saw Chester in concert in Vegas with, can't think of the name of the supergroup, but it's like Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. It was
amazing show. I heard talking about that, yeah.
Kings of Chaos, Corey Taylor. Amazing show. Amazing. And so someone, and this is where I would draw a line. Now, look, every one of us, no matter what we're talking about in life, has a line. Some lines are way bigger and some are way tighter. And so I would not, if I was at Chester's memorial, I would not have sold his stuff right now. I might have held on to it for years and then maybe sold it down the line. But eBay does, like most companies, walk a fine line where they will listen to the public. Mm-hmm. So although people were selling Linkin Park CDs and getting crazy top dollar and other things, they felt the need to pull the stuff from the memorial. And that was, you know, I don't have that line too much. I do find it a little shady that you were close enough to be the memorial and you threw it right up. That to me is a little shady.
Sorry, I was going to say, where do you think that line is? Because I actually had something similar happen very recently. I went to, not to bring up Star Wars again here, Josh, but at the Star Wars convention I was at in April, they had a panel about Carrie Fisher. And it was like a memorial, and they gave out to each of the people that could get in the room a very limited edition poster. And within like a half hour, it was on eBay for like $250. And so I'm like, I'm wondering where do you think that line is when someone dies to where it goes beyond just, well, there's supply and demand, and into something like you just said, where if you're one of these 100 people that get into Chester Bennington's funeral, why are you selling that?
Yeah, you know, the funeral is one thing. You know, you're at an event, like even if a Comic-Con or whatever, where they produce this limited edition thing. It was meant for those of you who got to go in and you enjoyed Carrie Fisher's work or just her work as Leia. But, you know, that is they would definitely not pull that because that is not directly related to the passing. But, you know, and I get it. I fully get that it's a fine line that you don't want to be the company in the news. Like, can you believe that eBay is allowing? Because that'll happen.
Yeah.
And yes, all press is good press to a point. You know, the old saying goes. But when you're dealing with a tragedy and Chester coming so close on the heels of Chris, it's very saddening. You really should pause and think about the demons that people wrestle with sometimes. And if you have a friend that has those demons, think about it, because we might have, the three of us might have normal thoughts about life, but someone else, for whatever reason, whether it be just drugs or an imbalance that nature's put in their body, their demons don't let them go. And it's tragic all the way around. Cause I saw a lot of, and I won't get into it too deep, but I saw a lot of posts about Chester's passing, and I was kind of mad at some people. Nobody I knew directly, but I just saw some, you know, internet tough guys, and I'm just like, and I have, you know, I got some friends that got some demons in their head, and the more I see things like this, the more I'm like, I'll give them a pass, because rational thought wouldn't let you do that. So I don't get too deep, but it just, you know, I was thinking about it when you said, let's talk about this. I was kind of mad at some of these people that said things that aren't in, that don't have those issues, that aren't in issues. And you don't know what's happening. It sucks. It's horrible. It's very much a horrible thing to think that is the only way to be free. Really.
I think there's a couple of ways you can look at this is with the items that they gave out. And I'm kind of, unfortunately, I did listen to another podcast today, and they brought this topic up after I talked about talking about it. So they made a couple of points where I was like, damn, that's a good point. But Godless over from the metal podcast, he made it a point to say, you know, they gave away a backstage pass, a wristband, and like a program. I mean, you give away stuff like that. I mean, what do you expect? It wasn't a flower. It wasn't, you know, just the normal church pamphlets, you know, something like that. It was stuff that it was almost meant to be, you know, given away and then sold at some point. So there's that point. And then at what point down the road, like, you know, you talk about the year turnaround on a Michael Jackson CD. But I mean, if somebody put this stuff up in 3 years, there would be zero outrage. So I mean, what's the time limit on something like this? I guess.
And you'll never know what it truly is. But and I get what they were saying. Yeah, they made it, you know, a celebration of his life, like the rock star that he was. You know, it's just like, you know, putting a bottle of Jack in with Lemmy when they put him in the casket. You know, you're going to go out of a rock star that you were your whole life. And so instead of the normal, you know, memorial paper, it was a, you know, it was a tour program for his funeral. But you're right. 3 years, no one would say a word, because it now just becomes part of the collectibleness of Linkin Park stuff. And, you know, there, not that I'm advocating this, but there are other venues to sell on that wouldn't have been as high profile. It probably could have made about the same money, but it wouldn't have brought this, you know, hammer down upon you. And if those sellers weren't keeping track of who was bidding, the second eBay pulls it, it's just gone like it never existed. So you're never even going to get back that information on who was bidding if you weren't paying attention.
The other school I saw on this too was, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, but I mean, a lot of people were saying that kind of once it got into the public eye like that, those were probably a lot of phony bids, and you may have not even seen that money, you know, once it happened, you know.
Yeah, that happens all the time, and not even on just tragedy type things. When someone has something very cool and unique, or like, you know, when a Cheeto is shaped like, you know, right. King Kong, at a lot of those bids, because people get so excited, and they've seen it happen with things that do sell for a lot of money, they throw it up there. Now, they can do some things to kind of protect from the idiots who are like, I'm just going to bid $10,000. I don't have it, but I'm going to bid it anyway. You know, but people get so excited that they found that Cheeto shaped like King Kong. They got to get it up right away. And they would just pause, talk to someone who knows a little bit deeper. You can do a few things to help get legit bids. And you know, if we're 3 years down the road and we're not talking about the tragedy of his passing, and someone was selling that stuff from the funeral, I would recommend that they do a few things that they could make sure that it's not, you know, stupid, not real bids, because it's just a waste of everyone's time. And then you're kind of like, okay, which one of these bids is actually real? And I'll offer it to that person.
You know, I have a lot of friends that if they went to my funeral and got a bunch of little knickknacks and souvenirs from my funeral, you know, a lot of people just don't keep things. A lot of people aren't sentimental when it comes to items. So, I mean, what's the chances of these people just throwing them up there, not to be scumbags like the internet is trying to make them out to be, but just being like, I don't really want these. I think a Linkin Park fan would want these, so I'm just going to throw them up there and then not expect, you know, I think these starting bids were like 1,000, which is still pretty high, but it, you know, I don't think they expected them to get up to 50,000 and the backlash of the publicity.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And look, I think those prices were probably legit, you know, because within anything in life, anything that has a fan, whether it be an inanimate object, like for myself, a tiki mug, or a person like Chester, there are fans who have a lot of money and they can spend crazy money on crazy things. I just acquired a platinum award record for Spice Girls because I'm a huge Spice Girls fan. I know I'm on a metal podcast right now, but you know, there was a person out there, me, that wanted that. And so I had the money to spend for it. But yeah, I think the price was right on, actually. So had they been, you know, legit, and you're right, Toomey, when people get upset over things like this, they are pushing out their feelings, their line on the rest of the world. So you're right. Maybe this person doesn't collect stuff or want stuff or lives in a tiny house or is a roadie who just lives on the road, doesn't even have a house. I got no room for crap. I got to sell it. Or maybe you don't know that that person who's selling it, their daughter just fell down the stairs and broke all her teeth and needs $10,000 in dental work. You don't know.
Right.
So everyone always thinks the worst. And that's the unfortunate thing with this day and age and the internet and social media. Everyone automatically thinks the worst. And that drives me insane because I teach people about eBay. And so when something doesn't go exactly how it should from A to B, people automatically think it's a scam and it's the worst thing ever. And sometimes it's just this happened and it wasn't nefarious. It wasn't bad. It just didn't go exactly how you would like it to go. But there was no ill intent. But so many people just go right to the worst thing. I'm like, when did we turn into that? I'd rather it's just assume the best. And then when you prove you're an asshole, then I'll deal with it.
It's the age of social media, man. That's how it works.
I know.
Well, I think the one thing with me is I was never a huge Linkin Park fan, even though it was kind of in the new metal era. You know, they were still kind of, you know, we've talked about on this podcast, they were kind of not in my wheelhouse or whatnot. But if you were to say, you know, at the Dimebag funeral that there was something that they gave away at that went up on eBay, and I had $100,000 in my bank account to just throw around fund, and you know, I would you know, do that, you know, throw some money at a Dimebag, you know, Dimebag funeral tchotchke or whatever. But yeah, so I mean, maybe that's the thing that people aren't looking at too, that, you know, there are fans out there that want these items. And so, you know, just because someone put it up and is getting, you know, $100,000, I mean, that's just on them, I guess.
But maybe to the person spending 50 grand on it, that will be the greatest thing they have ever owned. Chester meant something to him. His lyrics meant something to them. And, you know, I'm definitely not put on the level of my Spice Girls Platinum Award, but it was such a cool piece to add to my collection because I didn't find it, but a friend of a friend found it and I bought it off of them. I'm like, oh, heck yeah. You just don't know. So don't always think it's the worst of everyone. It might be, but it might not. So let's just think neutral until proven otherwise.
You know, the second person that put their stuff up is probably the bad guy in all of this because the first person could have put it up there as a roadie or someone that didn't have the room for it. But then they saw what the amount of money that the first one was starting to get. So they were like, oh, fuck, we can make a couple of bucks off of this. So let's throw ours up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You definitely want to be first to the table. And, you know, second, third, fourth, and fifth, you're just kind of sucking hind teat at that point. But if you're first to the table, like when I go to tiki events around the country, a lot of times part of going to the event, you get a mug. So my wife gets one and I get one. And I'm usually the first one to sell the extra one. Like the second we get there, mine's up and sold. And I've gotten top dollar and mine was the first one gone. And that me selling the second one kind of paid for the first one. So, you know, I'm always maximizing making money. Absolutely. That's what I do.
Absolutely, man. So let's get into a little Cleveland talk. And I want to throw this out to you because I actually threw this out to our good friend Chris Kale of Five Finger Death Punch, who is a massive Cincinnati Bengals fan, but he lives in Vegas and has for the last, how many ever years. And I texted him. I was like, this is your one chance to change football teams. And, you know, with your Las Vegas Raiders coming to town, and, you know, he basically said that he was going to stick with his Bengals. So, I mean, what's your take on it, man? This is your one shot to start, you know, rooting for an actual team.
Boo. I do not want the Raiders here. Look, I loved this town the way it was, and I did not want professional sports at all because it's just going to be more congested. So they're like, okay, we're going to bring a hockey team, and we're going to build an arena right on the strip. I'm like, oh, I already have a bunch of arenas. And so at first I was mad. And then I've been at that arena at least once a month for a concert. And it's an amazing arena. So I'm like, okay, not so mad. But then they're like, oh, hey, the Raiders are coming. You know where we're going to build a stadium for 70,000 right on the strip. I'm like, ugh, this will be horrible. Horrible. And then eight times a year, I got drunken Raiders fans wandering through my yard. Oh, gosh. So I am not happy. The only thing that would make me happy is if my beloved, my awful, my Cleveland Browns do play the Raiders. I'll be able to go down the street and see it and not have to travel to see it. So that'll be the only silver lining for me. I am just not a happy camper that there's going to be a giant stadium on the strip.
Yeah, you'll be glad to know that my co-host, John Drake, and one of the reasons he was in a bad mood today is because his friend was supposed to go pick up his Browns season tickets, and he was late getting them back or wouldn't answer a text or something. So, yeah.
The guy was a douchebag. Supposed to meet at a certain time and kept me waiting and then changed where we're meeting as I'm driving. Like, just give me my damn tickets, bro. Enough of this. I got podcasting to do.
And I like the fact that you're still hardcore enough that you are got season tickets, sir.
Every year. Last year was so hard because my wife, we sit in the dog pound, so we're about 12 rows off the field. And so they're really cool seats, but they're first come, first serve. The guy's got 20 of them. So it's basically if you have them the season before, you have first right of refusal. And last year was so goddamn miserable that we were like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this to ourselves? Like, we're spending this money, we're tailgating, you know, we're going to get food, we're losing sleep. You know, I play in a band on the weekends. I'm getting home at 5 a.m. and leaving at 9 to go tailgate. And we're like, why are we doing this? So sure enough, March comes and I get the email from the guy who's in. And it was like my hands just knew what to do. And before my head or my heart could do anything, my hands typed, yeah, we're in. Send ah shit. So it's just an automatic reflex at this point. I'm like that old dog in the backyard that's just waiting to get whooped with the stick.
If you live in a city that has successful teams, be it college or pro, and you've not lived in a Chicago or a Cleveland, you just don't understand that we still love them no matter what. And at the end of preseason game number one next week, we will already be saying, well, there's always next year.
Yeah. What are the quarterbacks available in the draft? Gosh. Who's coming out?
And then when I watch a game, I'm just like, who are these people? Like, I don't even know these names. I don't even know what's going on anymore. And then, you know, then we'll get some, you know, some veteran that's been around for like 35 years. They've dusted him off, put him in a game. He breaks his ankle. And then we're like, all right, now who's this third stringer that right. just came up from like Ignatius straight exactly. from high school to the pros?
Exactly. I was so disenchanted last year. We went to one game late in the season and they're announcing the defensive starters. And I went, like, literally 6 of the 11 guys, I went, who the fuck is that?
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
I'm like, am I at a preseason game? Is this the fourth quarter of, like, the fourth preseason game? What the hell?
Bunch of fans win the contest. Hey, you guys get to suit up this week. Woo!
Yeah.
And again, podcast listeners around the world are turning off the podcast because there's Browns talk on the show again.
Sorry. Let's talk rock and roll in Cleveland because that's way better than sports.
No, wait a minute. We do have to mention as Browns fans, this asshat on the line, Toomey, who his team wins a little bit one year and all of a sudden he's walking around like he's the mid-80s 49ers or something. Just like ripping people and, you know, oh, my Titans. I told him because when he was texting me about the tickets, Jason, he said he's making fun of me. He's like, did you go pick up your kindling? I said, let me tell you something. If you're going to talk trash, you're playing the Browns this year. If we beat you, you are going to be miserable dealing with me the next podcast we record because you're not going to hear the end of it for 2 hours.
If we only win that game, you'll never hear that to me.
That would make it almost better, wouldn't it? It's like last year, like a Chargers fan could say shit to us. Like, shut up, Chargers fans. We're 1-15 and you were the one. So like, it almost makes it better.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
Guys are terrible.
You're so, the one asking for it, man. So how long ago did you move out of Cleveland, man?
So I was born in 70 and I left in fall of 2000. So actually my wife got a job transfer that paid for everything. So someone paid me to leave Cleveland before my 30th winter and go to Southern California.
Well, the winters, definitely. I can't blame you on that one.
Oh, you know, I'll always say this, and I've said it before, and I'll always say it. I am so glad I grew up there, and I grew up out in the country, and I grew up in the woods, and I love the city of Cleveland itself, and I was so happy at the age of 30 to escape, and I won't come back.
Right. Of all places, like my friend, I sing in a band on weekends in Lima, which is an utter shithole, but
Lima. Oh yeah, Lima is a shithole. Lima, Mansfield, Steubenville. No offense, people, but those are the shitholes of the state.
Oh, it's terrible. But my wife is from Lima, so you know this band found me down there, and I make a good cash doing that. So you know, my wife gets to see family and friends and everything, and I make some good pocket money. And everyone's like, "Man, you know, you should really move to Lima. Like, it'd be so much easier traveling for the band." I was like, "Have you looked at your town? Like, no offense, but it is depressing here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to move here." My wife specifically said when we got engaged, she goes, "Well, how soon can I move to Cleveland?" She wanted out. And I was like, "Why would we go back? Good God."
So where do you guys live? You know, not exact address, but whereabouts do you live?
We're currently living in Hinckley. So. Okay. Yeah, we're in the housing market, so we're looking in Parma and Berea. I personally grew up in Strongsville, so.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't think I've ever told Toomey this, but my first career was sizing cheerleaders for their uniforms.
What?
Yes. And my territory was northwestern Ohio, so it was pretty much from like Sandusky all the way Toledo to the state line, down to Lima, down to Findlay, and that was my whole territory. So I was in Lima constantly sizing cheerleaders for their outfits.
Oh,
I'm sure you were. I'm sure you were.
Look back.
How does somebody get that job?
Well, first off, your mom works for the company, and then your mom says, "Hey, can you help me out?" And so I helped out a little bit, and then I helped out a little bit more. And the next thing I know, I had a career. I did it for 5 years, and I actually liked the job, but it was a lot of driving because we lived, my wife and I lived in Elyria, which is on the west side of Cleveland. And so even to get into my territory, it was like about a 40-minute drive to get to the closest part of my territory and about a 4.5-hour drive to the furthest point. And so after about 5 years, I was like, I just had enough of the driving. I was like, ugh, can't do this anymore.
Yeah,
so that's when I got into working at record stores, and now we can talk about music. See? Boom. There it is.
There we go.
All right, Jason, you had sent me a list of shows you've been to recently, and the one thing that kind of jumped out at me, and we'll get into Corey Feldman in a minute, but you went and saw Queen with Adam Lambert, and Queen with Adam Lambert is kind of a you know, that's one thing you thought on the internet, you're going to that, you're getting a lot of hate, but from what I can tell, it seems like he's doing a pretty good job, man. What's your take on the old Queen with Adam Lambert?
Well, about three songs into the concert, I was pissed.
Okay.
I was pissed. This was my first time seeing Queen with Adam Lambert. Now, I never got to see Queen, and I am a huge Queen fan, huge Freddie. I think Freddie was the greatest frontman of all time. I don't want to hear any arguments from anybody else. We all got our own, but Freddie was amazing. Because when I was younger, when I started to realize that all these songs were Queen, their sound was so varied and so different. It was unlike any other band. Like, you heard a Kiss song, for the most part, you knew it was Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
But Queen, you're like, wait, Radio Gaga and Stone Cold Crazy, these are all the same band? That's so amazing. So Adam didn't try to pretend to be Freddie. He was Adam. But he is such the perfect frontman to fill in for the greatest frontman of all time, because he has Freddie qualities for sure. But he didn't try and make us believe he was Freddie. He was just Adam singing, and the band sounded phenomenal. He sounded phenomenal. And I was just in awe. I think my mouth was open the whole time. And some other friends had gone and they were in other seats. And my wife and I were in these seats, and none of us had seen Queen with Adam. And we were all so amazed and so blown away and so mad we hadn't seen it before. And they come around again, I'll be the first to buy tickets next time.
Yeah, they were every time I've seen anything with them, you know, it seems like he does a great job. He was probably one of the only people I ever really remember from American Idol, you know, watching him as it went on. For some reason, I think Tabitha was maybe watching it that year, so that means I was watching it that year. We all know how the TV
good husband,
works.
Good husband.
Right, right. That's how I know what's going on in Big Brother. But yeah, so, I mean, I've seen mixed reviews online. I saw a couple of other music journalists type kind of hate on it, that they went and saw it and they thought it was terrible. But, you know, from everyone that's kind of just a fan of music, you know, they just say it's a great show. I mean, the show itself is amazing. The screens are amazing and things like that.
I mean, if anyone hates on it, they truly aren't a fan of music, because here's the options. We don't get to see Queen, or we do, And I fully believe of all the singers they could have, this is the one that should be there. And because, you know, Freddie marched to the beat of his own drummer for sure. And so does Adam. And they just, from what I can see, they don't restrict Adam or tell him anything. Like, you be Adam, we're going to be Queen, and you just happen to sing for us. And I think it's a great match. You know, I had never seen him. So finally to get to see him and see Brian play was just awesome. And I'm so glad. But yeah, if people hate on that show, they just must not be a fan of music, because we've all seen concerts where we're like, you guys should hang it up. Stop trying. Vince Neil, stop trying.
Right.
But they shouldn't. They really shouldn't. And I saw a sold out 20,000 seat arena with fans from Adam Lambert fans who are young, you know, 12 year olds to 70 year olds, all enjoying the same show. And I fully enjoy when a band can transcend generations and you can watch young and old enjoy the concert just the same.
I figured John would jump in at some point with his vocal nonsense.
No, I agree with everything he's saying, man. I completely agree. I mean, if it's good, keep it going. It's, you know, being a Van Halen fan, it's like the opposite for me with David Lee Roth. He's awful. Hang it up. But if they had somebody good, like people are saying, oh, you got to get Michael Starr from, you know, Steel Panther because he's sang in the Atomic Punks and he still sounds awesome. That'd be fine with me. Like, just play the songs I love. I want them to sound good. I mean, I really have no problem with a replacement vocalist as long as they're not trying to do vocal histrionics and be like, well, here's my interpretation of this classic song that you love. And, yeah, you know, from what I've heard, you know, about those Queen shows, like you said, Adam Lambert is himself, but he does such justice to the material that, you know, that's exactly what you want to see. Because, like you said, your other option is to never see that music live again.
Yeah. And I'd much rather, I know I'll probably get shit and be called a wuss, but, you know, it was almost a little bit emotional because I finally got to see the band that I've always loved. And they just, I don't know, respectfully did it. You know, I don't know, it's kind of weird, but it was just, you know, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't trying to be anything. It wasn't. And I got a great David Lee Roth story for you. So we're living in Southern California, and it was that tour where Dave and Sammy went on tour together. And truth be told, I'm a fan of both, but I'm still a fan of Sammy's. I ain't no longer a fan of Dave. Yeah. And so this was a tour where they flip-flopped who opened. And so luckily, Sammy opened the night we saw him, so we could scoot out. But we wanted to see what Dave was doing. And my wife said, and most of your fans might not know this reference, my wife said to me, when did Dave Lee Roth turn into Carol Channing? And so if you don't know who Carol Channing is, go look her up. And then that's how Dave was. But here's what drove me nuts. So it's 2000 and whatever, five, let's say, three.
2002,
two. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Van Halen fans, David fans, Sammy fans, we're not young anymore. Dave came out like it was 1982, and within the first song, dumped an entire bottle of Jack Daniels on the front row of people.
Yeah, he did. Did it at my show, too.
And I am just sitting for a few rows back, and I'm like, I would punch him. Like, I am not a 20-year-old girl who wants to blow him later. I'm a 50-year-old woman who's wearing some nice pants, and now I am covered in Jack Daniels, and I got to drive back to Long Beach? What kind of bullshit is that?
that was a pretty amazing tour. I saw Sammy open, too, and Sammy just wiped the floor with him. It was crazy.
You know, if you don't like Sammy, I get it. That's fine. It's cool. But, you know, Sammy's one of those. He is old now, and that fucker can still sing.
Yeah.
We just saw him, and I'm like, this is like he signed a deal with the devil because he still sounds great and he plays great.
I mean, it's like the first tour he's had to like tune down, but the guy's going to be 70 in October and he's still singing all this crazy high stuff. I'm like, God damn, man. Yeah. And Dave just sounds like someone stepped on a cat. Horrible. Yes,
and I would much rather have these singers tune down and be able to sing than try to replicate when they were 20.
Yeah. It's almost
I'm
like
cool with that.
Yeah, me too. It's almost like I don't know if you guys are into Zeppelin at all, but when they did Celebration Day a few years ago, that when they did that reunion show in 2007 for Ahmet Erdogan, and you know, they obviously, you know, tuned down for Robert Plant, but holy crap, he sounded amazing. I mean, when they did Kashmir, and in the middle when he's doing that, ooh, yeah. I mean, it was, oh my God, it gives you chills. Even tuned down, the guy was just nailing this stuff, and you're like, God damn.
Yeah, no, I'm not a huge Led Zeppelin fan, nor Van Halen fan, so you guys are out of my realm here.
So far, we talked Zeppelin, Van Halen,
and the
Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, you know my love of the Spice Girls. We text all the time. I've shown you my picture of myself.
Let's talk.
I've seen my picture of me and Sporty Spice. You know, I've met her back in the day.
Ginger Spice was where it's at.
Ginger's good too.
Oh, absolutely. Ginger's my girl. Heck yeah.
What's her name? Jerry Hallowell. That's right. Yep. Yeah, that was, if I had a Spice Girl, that would be the one.
That's so funny. I was just friended on Facebook by somebody with that name, and I'm like, why do I know this name? And as you guys said it, it hit me. It's not her, but I guess it's somebody with the same name. I was like, well, how do I know this name, Jerry Hallowell?
Shit, if it is her, you better hook me up right now,
right?
Brother.
Yeah, right? Watch, it probably is her. You just don't know it. She looks so different. You got friend requested by
I can wait for the text messages now, but my Spice Girls concert experience was me and some friends went, and we had tickets, but this is back in the Ticketmaster. I guess it's still Ticketmaster days, but we had set them in our dashboard, and they got hot, and they had like just turned they turned almost like pitch black. So like I had to go up to the front of the get the ticket guy and be like, no, I swear these are Spice Girls tickets. So.
is that the goofiest show you've ever been to, is the Spice Girls? Because we've all got that concert where you're just like, meh.
For me, no, it's one we're about to talk about. I saw Corey Feldman in concert last month.
Oh, wow. I've heard those shows are a little bit interesting.
Yeah, you obviously haven't seen my video, so when we hang up, head over to my YouTube channel. That's Jason C. Smith on YouTube. And I took video of quite a bit of the concert. Then I edited it together in about 5 minutes of a bunch of different clips. You trust me when I tell you, it is the most awful thing you'll hear, but you must watch the whole thing. To me, did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I watched your whole video. And it's funny because he played here recently. And I think maybe the tour had been going on for a while. And, packed house. It seems like everybody's having a good time, and some of the videos I saw from that night seemed like it had maybe gotten a little bit better, but wasn't that opening night of the tour that you saw?
It was opening night of the tour, and if you're not familiar with Corey, he has who he calls angels. So he has a real wife, and then he has these other girls who are his angels. They all have to wear wings. They're all in white, and they all play the band, and none of them are good. And they all get a chance to sing. Now, his singing abilities, ugh. And then his wife gets a spotlight, and it is awful. You'll want to turn the video off when you get to that point, but just stay with it. But what was blowing my mind was, we got free tickets. It's Vegas. When shows don't sell out, the nice thing about Vegas is when shows don't sell out, we get a lot of free tickets because casinos are smart enough to realize, well, we didn't make the money on the ticket price, but we get people in, they'll probably drink and gamble. So we'll still make our money. So we go to free shows all the time, and they're not always shitty shows. I've seen like Don Henley for free. I've seen Rancid for free, you know, so big names sometimes for whatever reason don't sell out. So we go to Corey, and behind every song are footage of all his movies, which are not all on the same movie company. And I looked at my wife and went, there is no way he licensed all of these. There's right, just no way. So he just bootleg it, and then they play clips, and the sound from the clips is all distorted. That's how it sounds. We're all like, what is happening right now? And so he's playing Stand By Me, and he wrote a love letter to the loss of Corey Haim, and then he decides he's going to be a drummer.
Oh, God.
And he can't drum. Oh, God. And he does the Beatles, Why Don't We Do It in the Road, and he does Stand By Me. I mean, just, it was... Like, it's a train wreck. Of all the train wrecks you couldn't turn away from, this was the trainiest of the wreckiness. It was just off. And at one point, he goes, all right, we got merch in the back. We got T-shirts. We got CDs. Oh, I see a lot of people buying stuff. I happened to be standing by the merch table when he said that. And I turned and looked, and I was the only person standing there. And I'll tell you this. I wasn't buying nothing. But here's the funny part. He has released CDs for about 15 years, unbeknownst to me. Some of his early CDs that were selling still had the tower sticker on them. So he must have done a consignment.
Oh, wow.
He still has them all these years later.
Oh, my God.
Tower sticker's probably worth more than the CD.
I will say, though, there's about a dozen of us that went for free. My wife and I lasted the longest. He did almost 2 hours. We stayed for about 92 minutes.
Wow.
And everyone else bailed by the hour mark. Some bailed the half hour mark. I mean, even though we knew what we were going to see. But I was just enthralled. And there was one song that he played earlier that we all liked. So when you get a chance, everyone, look up Corey Feldman, Duh. It's a horrible song, but by the end, you're going to be going, Duh. He wrote a good hook. If you put it with an actual singer, it actually might make him some money. But he wrote a hook that we were all walking out going, Duh. I'm like, hey, I'll give him props. He wrote a good hook.
Wow. Yeesh. Man,
I've seen crazy awful concerts, but that wins. That definitely wins. Nothing will beat it ever.
I just wonder how many people were there as actual fans of his.
There was
like,
a lot.
Musically, or if they were just there for like you were there. Like, okay, I'm here to see what I am expecting to be a god awful train wreck. You know, was it Rubberneckers or actual fans?
I don't think it was. I think there were zero fans of his music, but I do think there was a lot of fans of his movies. You know, especially, you know, I'll give it up to him. He had a lot of great movies. I just watched Lost Boys the other day. I love that movie.
Well, Stand By Me is phenomenal. That's one of my all-time favorites.
So those people who showed up who were, you know, teens back then, who are, you know, my age now, they were there for the sure point that they were able to stand 6 inches from Corey and see the kid they loved in Lost Boys and Stand By Me.
How big was this place where you saw them?
It was a little joint inside the Hard Rock called Vinyl, and Vinyl holds 500, 600. I saw Mushroom Head there not too long ago, so there. I'll swing it back to metal. I saw Mushroom Head and Vinyl, too. And I love Mushroom Head, Cleveland boys, and I think they never got their due, but, man, they brought maybe even a slightly smaller crowd than Corey did.
Yeah,
they're still touring.
I know. And I thought it was a great show. And, you know, I worked for Record Exchange back in the day in Cleveland when Mushroom Head was just, you know, becoming huge in Cleveland. And they had all their side bands like 216 and 10,000 Cadillacs. And those guys were making a ton of money just being local.
They still are. I mean, I have a guy that I played music with for 20 years who's actually working with Skinny in their studio now. He's a producer himself, and he's toured they have a band called Unsaid Fate that goes on tour with them. It's actually Skinny's girlfriend. That's how they get the slot. The lead singer of Unsaid Fate is Skinny's girlfriend, and my buddy plays guitar for them, and he told me that just on that website they have where they make their masks and sell them to fans, they're pulling in thousands of dollars a guy. It's like my buddy, he played a couple shows in a mask with them. So he made his own mask and he sold like 10 of them and they were going for over like $500 a piece. And he was on stage with them maybe two or three shows with this thing. So those guys, if nothing else, they know how to market and
they always
make it a living, man.
And I don't know if I talked about this to me before, but they were supposed to be signed. Look, there's a whole controversy with them and Slipknot, and I was there. So I'm one of the few people that have a firsthand knowledge of what was going on. So you can read speculation, but I worked for Record Exchange and we were the main store that distributed all their merchandise. And we distributed their hoodies and their calendars and everything else back when they had the girl in the band. I think her name was Roxy.
It was Roxy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Roxy did some things on stage that the boys didn't like, so Roxy was no longer.
Yeah.
But they were supposed to be signed to Roadrunner, and they sent all their stuff to Roadrunner, and Roadrunner basically said to them, all right, we'll pay you like $1.25 an album. And they're like, we're making $9 an album. Why would we do that?
Yep.
Well, we're going to distribute you know, worldwide. And they're like, yeah, but still, we're making so much locally that we won't be able to afford to be signed to a major the way you're going to do it. And then next thing you know, we get some promos at the record store for Slipknot, who look surprisingly like Mushroom Head at the time. Yep. And I'm like, what's going on here? And so, you know, they pretty much decided that Mushroom Head didn't want the deal, they went with Slipknot, and it was way too similar and kind of weird at the time. And I told Toomey, I was at the concert the first time Slipknot played. They were opening for Machine Head and Biohazard, and all the Mushroom Head fans were in attendance at Nautica down the flats, and they had all snuck in D batteries in their socks, and they just wailed on Slipknot. And there was never a moment at that show where there was every member of Slipknot on stage, because there was always someone in the audience fighting. It was one of the craziest concerts I've ever been to.
Yeah, one of my buddies went to that, so I heard all about that. He's like, you wouldn't believe what happened between the Slipknot guys and the Mushroom Head fans. I was like, wow. And honestly, I don't know how many Mushroom Head shows you've seen, but, you know, being I opened for Mushroom Head twice back then in like the late 90s when I was in my band. And, you know, I have nothing against Mushroom Head guys, but their fans could be monstrous fuckheads. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
I agree. And I've seen them everywhere from Cleveland to L.A. to Vegas. And I still enjoy the boys and I have all their CDs, and I still put on 10,000 Cadillacs every once in a while. That was their foray into rap.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not
the problem with Mushroom Head was the fact that they never had any songs. Like the gimmick was cool, and like the some of their masks, like when they kind of like uniformed the masks with the little X's and all that stuff on their faces and stuff. I mean, it ended up looking very cool, but at the end of the day, man, I could not stand that singer's voice for anything, and that's what Slipknot kind of had on them. I think Slipknot had the songs and the singer.
Oh, I agree. Corey's amazing, because we've seen Corey in so many different bands. We saw him in a band that no one really has ever seen. He had a all cover band dressed like Elvis play one night at the Hard Rock. So I've seen Corey sing so many different ways yes, Corey definitely wins hands down. But I still enjoy Mushroom Head's music. I have all the CDs. And hey, here we'll throw it back to eBay. You find the early stuff. It is tricky to find. And there's moments and points in time when the early Cleveland release stuff is worth a ton of money. Like 10,000 Cadillacs, like Super Buick from Mushroom Head, M3, 216. They're always worth good amounts of money. So if you're trolling around CD stores in Cleveland and find early stuff, you can make some money.
There you go.
I think you can still find some of those in like the... I know I saw some of the really old stuff. Actually, like you said, Record Exchange. There's called The Exchange now, but I know for a fact that I saw one of the late 90s. I think it was 10,000 Cadillacs in the local CD section. I was like, wow. That is a blast from the past. It's like, and who knows, you could get it for like $5 and watch it go eBay it for a couple hundred or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and that's, you know, kind of like going back to talking about, you know, death makes people's stuff go up in value. So Mushroom Head's on tour for a while, then they're quiet for a while. Well, they release a new album. They're not a huge band, but once they release a new album, then people get back into them. If you find that early release, that's when you throw it up, when they're on a cycle of a new album or a new tour. And obviously offer worldwide shipping, because, you know, some of these bands that aren't huge here are definitely huge in Europe. And so you've got all these fans over there, and, you know, so offer worldwide shipping. It is easy to ship CDs to Europe.
So speaking of eBay, and I know the big eBay convention just happened. Anything in the world of music, selling music online, things like that, that was talked about, or maybe anything that you can kind of encapsulate into the music world?
Nothing music per se, but eBay's got a cool new feature, a bunch of new features coming out, but one of them is it's going to recognize stuff. So your app, you're going to be able, like, if you were standing behind somebody in a vintage Black Sabbath t-shirt, you can whip out your phone soon, push the button, and it'll show you all the versions of that shirt for sale on eBay at that moment. So it's going to make it so easy. If you're like, oh my God, I had that shirt, I lost it, I need to buy it quick. You could pretty much do it while you're standing behind the guy in line. So you don't got to go hunt it down. You got to type nothing up. They have built the technology to read stuff. Now, on the other end of that, if you see somebody wearing a pair of boots and you don't even know what those boots are, but they're like, those are some cool ass rock boots. You snap that picture, it'll go figure out what those boots are. It'll show you the ones that are listed. It'll tell you the brand. It'll tell you everything about it. So pretty neat technology coming out that, I'm just going to wander around places and snap pictures of things, see if I can buy them.
I think that's the future. Does Amazon offer anything like that yet or not?
Yeah, Amazon's got a pretty bitchin' scanner. And so eBay was behind the times, but eBay, instead of being behind the times, they're building the technology, and they showed us how it's going to work, that they're going to kind of zoom past, so to speak, because it's not just showing you the exact product, because Amazon's only works on things that have barcodes. So whether it has the barcode on it at that moment or not, if it had a barcode like a blender or a CD or a board game, it'll recognize it. With the eBay one, it'll pretty much see anything, and of course you can't find it like an obscure rock in your backyard that's going to show you anything, but you take a picture of a pair of boots someone's wearing, it'll go find those boots. If they're for sale on eBay, if they're not, of course it can't find them, but if someone has it, it'll instantly show you. And then they're also incorporating it with Alexa and the new Apple thing, you know, the things that are around your house that you can talk to. eBay is going to be incorporated now, and you can just like, hey eBay, go buy me a Black Sabbath reunion CD, and it'll just do it for you. So The future's here, boys.
So we've talked about this a little bit in the past, and you know, this is being your, I think, your fourth appearance on the show. So I mean, if people are listeners, they know a little bit about your past. But I mean, you know, you got into the thrifting thing. eBay took notice of you. Even they took notice of you even before Thrift Hunters, correct?
Oh yeah, yeah. They they've involved me in events pretty much straight through for the past 15 years. I've been to Congress twice with eBay lobbying Congress on behalf of any eBay seller. They just had the big eBay event here in town. They had me doing four different functions at the event. I was on stage a couple times. I broadcast live from their broadcast booth, all kinds of things. And I love to do it. There's, you know, they don't ever like pay me or anything, but I love to do it because I love leading people. I love teaching. You know, my mom and dad are both retired. They're mid 70s and they're killing it on eBay. Because of that, I did a show with my mom, and I have all these people who are of the senior generation who are now earning money on eBay. Now, some need it, and some are just using it, like my folks, as extra fun money in their retired years. And I love the fact that eBay keeps me keeps involving me. I love the fact that people look up to me, they follow me, and I help them. And that's not, you know, that's not me so much patting myself on the back as it is to say, if you got someone that could use some extra money or has a, maybe they want to try, just, you know, find me online or find me on YouTube. And I got so much free content out there that'll help you get started. It'll help you learn new stuff. Like, I sell music online, but I also sell bras and purses. I don't wear bras and purses, but I learn and I teach myself things and I teach others things. So I want everyone who wants to be their own boss and be successful to be able to do it.
I've always wondered about like doing the online, you know, the, like, you know, making your living that way. Is there something that like really sells like hotcakes that is like a really odd item you wouldn't think of as being something that a ton of people buy a lot of all the time?
Well, I would say, and you know, your female listeners would be like, what? It's used bras. But
really?
But it's the bigger sizes, because you can walk into any Walmart or any Victoria's Secret and buy a 36C bra. What you cannot buy is a 48 double K. But there are women out there who are 48 double K, and so they don't have a lot of options. So when I'm thrifting and I find all these big sizes, they're easy to flip, because, you know, and saying I sell big men's clothes too, like 6X, 7X, 8X. And what you got to think about too is if you're an 8 extra large person, you cannot just buy clothes anywhere. And you probably aren't all that mobile. You're not going to just run down to the local mall. And so the great thing about buying and selling online is you can buy anything online. And if you wear an 8X top or a 48 double K bra, it is very easy to go online, like places like eBay, and just click purchase. And then it just shows up. You ain't got to go nowhere. So that's one thing that caught me off guard. A female friend said, you know, you should be selling bras. I'm like, women buy used bras? And then she explained. She goes, yeah, normal sizes are okay, but it's when you find the obscure sizes that do really well, because there's not a lot of options.
That's awesome. I've always wondered about that.
Well, and I highly recommend you wash them before wearing them. And when I buy them, I don't buy just every one I find, because if it is gross or if it's been worn out to death, I'm not buying those. But typically the ones I buy, I can see they've only been worn, you know, once or twice, three, four, five times. Not like, oh, this bra is 17 years old, has been worn every day for the last 17 years. Yeah, yuck. That I won't buy.
Yeah, true. All right. Yeah, I've always wondered about that. And you know, the other question is kind of interesting to me. Like, I know when eBay first, you know, came on the scene years ago, it was all the rage, and it's you heard just people going bonkers over eBay. And you know, as the years have gone by, you don't hear about it as much, but it's still, you know, obviously everybody still goes to it. Has the popularity kind of grown, or has it kind of stayed the same, or how has the reaction, the public reaction to eBay been as time has gone on?
Yeah, it's so great that you asked that. And I will be sharing this podcast to me with my eBay peeps, the higher ups that I know, because we talked about that quite a bit at eBay Open. You know, all businesses, whether it be brick and mortar like Walmart or Target, or online like Amazon or eBay, they have advertising. Well, eBay's had this weird idea of how they should advertise. They'll advertise like twice a year and then be off twice a year. Around the holidays for sure, and maybe around spring, but not advertise in winter and summer. Excuse me. And so they have this new campaign called Fill Your Cart with Color, because they're kind of taking on Amazon's beige boxes. everything you find in life that's colorful you can find on eBay. Well, they told us we're going to advertise from now on. None of this turning advertising off. We need to let the world know we're still here. There's hundreds of millions of users, both buyers and sellers on eBay, and you can find all kinds of cool stuff on eBay and cooler stuff than you can find on Amazon kind of thing. But we talked a lot about we want to make sure the world still knows that eBay is a viable place to buy and to sell. And I'm so glad you said that because you're like, you know, you kind of don't hear about it. But with this new platform, and the platform is digital, it's TV, it's radio, it's billboards, it's everywhere. And part of the reason they have the event is not so much for the 2,000 who attend it and learn. It's those 2,000 to go out and tell everyone how cool the event was and how cool eBay stuff's coming up. And here I'm on the podcast talking to you guys, telling you guys about the cool new technology that anybody who shops online is going to want to use. And so they're going to be around, and they're getting more involved in community stuff too now. And that's kind of cool because, I like when big companies are like, oh, we should probably do some cool stuff. And I was actually just in San Francisco through an eBay function with my friend Teresa with the Glide Foundation. And the Glide Foundation feeds underprivileged people in San Francisco. And I was actually helping do the lunch yesterday in downtown San Francisco. And eBay's been working with them. So it was cool to see that as part of their new kind of outlook on life. Not that they didn't do this in the past, but they're really going gung-ho and helping communities and doing what they can. So you'll see a lot of eBay stuff coming up.
Awesome.
And I'm sure the guys in Death Angel and Violence and all those guys really appreciated the Meals for the Homeless for those guys. I will say, you know, when I first, you know, started the show a couple of years ago, it's coming up on 2 years now. I was racking my brain on who I could bring on. And, you know, I was a big fan of your show. Like I told you 1,000 times over and over, you know, like my buddy and I, who we ran flea market booths with and stuff, you know, we would work together and we worked third shift together and went in basically every, I don't remember what day your show aired, but whatever day it aired, like we would go in that night and be like, did you see what they found on Thrift Hunters and blah, blah, blah. And when it came time to start thinking of guests for the show, I was like, wonder whatever happened to that guy. And, you know, I don't know how much you were doing at the time. I know you had thrifty business with J&A, but I mean, the thrifting board was still kind of new. You know, it's definitely yep. way under 10,000 members, where it's up over, what, 30 now? Where are you at on that?
We're almost at 33,000 less than 2 years later.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I mean, you know, I've kind of watched your projection over the last couple of years to what you've kind of grown this empire. And it's been fun to watch, man. I'm very proud to have you as a friend.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah, I it's one of those things where that's where, you know, we talked about what we don't love about the internet age and social media. But what we do love is you and I would have never been friends. We never would have met, and we haven't officially met like live yet. But without social media, without the internet, we would not have been friends. And I have so many friends around the world that I haven't officially met yet, but they are my friends, and you guys are my friends. And it's that part of it's great. You know, you can reach out. You're like, what the guy from Thrift Hunters is up to, and boom, now we're buddies and we hang out, and you've been on my show, I've been on yours, and the respect is mutual. I love your podcast. I love you, and I love Primer 55. So, you know,
there you go.
It's that's the joy of social media, making buddies, making pen pals. This is modern day pen pals,
modern
man.
Modern day pen pals. All right. Well, to wrap it up, I'm going to let you pick a song, any song, heavy song, whatever you want to pick. You know, maybe your favorite Primer 55 song. I don't know. Anything you want to pick out there, and we'll end on that. But and before you get to that, make sure to, make sure to plug your 9,000 outlets and where people can find you.
All right. Yeah. So the main one, I have a couple of shows I do on YouTube. So just look up Jason T. Smith on YouTube and you'll find me. Thrifty Business is one show, Selling Past Your Expiration Date, Being Thrifty is another, and Thrift Halls, where I show all the cool stuff I find each week and explain why you should find it, what it's worth, and what it's going to sell for. My Facebook group is The Thrifting Board on Facebook, about 33,000 members. It's free. If you need any help, even if you're not a thrifter, but you found something, you're like, what is this? Someone in my group will know. And then if you want to find me on eBay, buy anything cool from me, it's Tiki Pug Music, TikiPug. MUSIC.
And if you want to watch something fun, watch somebody go watch somebody go into the thrifting board and make a sideways comment about anything and just watch the people attack. It's probably one of my favorite things.
Well, you know, it's not so much attack, but we don't allow negativity. And so if you're going to come in and be like, screw eBay and PayPal, and every customer is evil. Well, that just that's not a good discussion to make. But if you've got a problem, bring it without emotion and just the facts, and we'll get it fixed for you. Because we definitely know with the 33,000 people and the connections we have within eBay and the like, we definitely can get any problem fixed or at least addressed for you.
Yeah, and I will kind of piggyback on that comment of you know, people go in there and they'll trash customer, they'll think it's a scam, they'll take one small negative review and blow it up, and the one thing that you know that they not only kind of pounce on them, but they also just kind of steer them in the right direction is kind of what I was going at too, because it's, you know, they'll come on there and be like, I sent the guy a medium shirt and I stated it was a medium and he said it didn't fit and, you know, he wants to return it, you know, I think this is a scam, and you're like, no man, it's just people sometimes, you know, a medium doesn't always
just didn't fit
the same. but you know, some people blow it up as like, you know, they're scamming, it's gonna start a trend and my entire eBay business is gonna go down if I refund this guy his money. It's ridiculous.
Throw in one quick story before we go about getting scammed on this, because I've done a lot of business on eBay. Like, not I've only sold a few things, but it's always buying.
Oh yeah,
and I've had nothing but great experiences. So nothing like that. But you know, since we're talking about Amazon, I recently ordered go figure, a Star Wars Trivial Pursuit set, but there's four versions of it. So, Jason, if you could find this for me, because I'm going to need another copy. It was one released around 99. It was just specific to Episode One, The Phantom Menace. And it's the only one of the four that I don't have. So I had it on Amazon. I was like kind of keeping an eye on it. Someone had it for like $60. I'm like, eh. And all of a sudden it went down to like 19. I was like, all right, I'm going to jump on this. So I ordered this thing. And long story short, what I actually got in the mail was a book about, like, basically a come to Jesus book.
Whoa. Like,
and I was,
whoa.
To say that I was pissed is a little bit of an understatement. And so, that person was cool and they refunded my money. Cause I kind of, you know, I was very direct. I wasn't rude in my email, but I was a little direct in saying, you know, if this is like you kind of shoving your, you know, theology on me, when I'm just trying to play some Star Wars Trivial Pursuit and answer trivia about Jar Jar Binks, I'm really not happy with this, and I'd really like you to rectify this. But so that's the only time I ever got scammed, but at least they gave me my money back. So I just, you know, figured that was appropriate to the conversation.
Yeah, and I will definitely keep an eye out for it, but when I find it, I will make fun of you that you're dying to find a Phantom Menace game. Okay?
Hey, that's fine. There's no shame in my game, dude. I love all of it. So I'm a completist.
All right, Toomey, I picked a song, and I won't lose all your listeners, so I will not pick a Spice Girl song.
So tell me what you want.
But since we talked about it, let's end with Mushroom Head Queerty.
Queerty. No problem. We can get that on there. All right. And
boys from Cleveland, Little Love. Woo woo.
Little Cleveland Love. Somebody's got to love them up there. I mean, you know, you've got LeBron, so I mean, I guess that's all you get. LeBron and Mushroom Head. That's all I know about Cleveland.
Excuse me, the Tribe is in first place too, you jerk.
Yeah, we just kicked the Angels' ass last week.
Yeah, so how about that?
Sorry, we went nerd back to... See, you, Toomey, you brought us back to sports.
All right.
See what happens?
Yeah. All right, let's check out Mushroom. let's check out Mushroom Head, and we'll talk to Jason later. It's good talking to him.
Thanks, guys. Patriotic whores dig their own graves for their own sake.
the cost. We will never surrender, leave abandoned or lost. When the rich wage war and the patriotic whores take their own graves for their own sake, another casualty, another travesty. Another motherfucking German shepherd crying with his dick stepping back, slapping, smack, grabbing, kicking with the brakes. Boom, boom, boom. How much is out of our head? It's like, fuck you, I had a bad time. Show the world that it was once said, whatever the cost, we will never surrender, leave a banner no lost. When the rich wage war and the patriotic whores take their own grave for their own sake, another casualty, another travesty, another motherfucking German shepherd crying with his dick stepping back, slapping, smack, grabbing, kicking with the brakes. Drop, boom, boom.
Do you love it loud? Then plan to attend the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. One-day event celebrating all things rock and roll. Over 20 rock podcasts from all over North America recording on site. Panel discussions with producers that have worked with Ozzy, Slayer, Kiss, Y&T, Seven Dust, Dokken, and more. Celebrity signings and meet and greets with current and former members of Cinderella, Winger, Tora Tora, Collective Soul, Ty Kettle, The Monkees, with more to be announced. All that and record dealers slinging some sweet vinyl. The Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo takes place Saturday, August 26th at the Music Valley Event Center. More information available at NashvilleRockinPodExpo.com as well as on Facebook. The Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo. Feast your ears.
All right, that was Mushroom Head as requested by Jason T. Smith. And man, what a cool guy, man. I love having that guy on the podcast.
Yeah, he was great, man. It was a good conversation. It was awesome to meet him. And it's always good to talk with a fellow Clevelander, you know, have some common ground. That was cool.
Yeah, that was one of those where I'm like trying to tell you, I'm like, no, man, this guy's cool. Not that you were going to say yes or no on the guest at this point. But I mean, I'm like, you know, you just trust me on this one. Jason's a good dude. He'll have some cool stories. I know he's kind of from the thrift world and like reality TV and all that fun stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, he's always been fun to have on the show.
Yeah, it's funny because I've always been kind of interested in that kind of eBay type of thing and making extra money on that. And I actually bought some of those self-help things on, you know, infomercials, like how to make money, you know,
right,
on, you know, drop shipments and stuff. And so I think, you know, I'm definitely going to look his stuff up and go in the groups and kind of check it out, man. That's something that has always interested me. So it was really fun for me to, you know, get to hear him telling some stories about that. And, you know, it was cool, man.
Yeah, he was, like I said, he was kind of one of the first people that I reached out to, you know, when I even started this show. Not to sound like Neely, but yeah, when I started the show 20 years ago, no, but when I started the show, yeah. I was looking for different people to have on. And yeah, he, like I said in the interview, he's definitely one of those dudes. I was like, I wonder what ever happened to that guy. And then looked into him. And like I said, man, he's built this like kind of empire based on the show. And we've talked about in the past where he'll go out to thrift stores and people still recognize him. Aren't you the guy from TV and stuff like that? And they peek in his cart and see what he's buying. But you know, he's living the dream out there in Vegas. He's a good dude.
Yep. And you know, like I wanted to ask you, because I know we asked him, but you know, I said, you know, what's the weirdest concert you've ever been to? So we know, like he said, he's been to Corey Feldman. What was yours? Because I was trying to think of mine, and I don't know that I've really had anything that would be considered really weird. I think have you?
The most bizarre one that I could, once I thought about it for a minute, the one that came to mind was when Tabitha was pregnant with Elton, we had gotten Trinity tickets for One Direction, and we were Tabitha was going to go, but it was in Nashville, and it was, you know, 3 hours away from the house, and she was all kinds of pregnant, and she's like, "Can you go? Can you take her?" And I'm like, "I guess." I think I wore my nicest Pantera shirt, my nicest camo shorts, and went to the One Direction show, and it was funny, man. We walked around the you know, stadium. They played the Titan Stadium, so I'm very familiar with where they played. And and we were walking around the venue on the outside, and one of the One Direction fellows was like way up high and kind of peeked over, and man, it was like the Beatles were there. They're like, "Oh my God, it's him!" And like girls, like Trinity started crying, and like just all this stuff. Just it was so bizarre, man. But they had their own little like traveling circus going on. Like even while you waited in line, there were merch booths at every entrance. So while you were waiting all day to get in to get up front or something, you know, you could go ahead and buy your shirts and your tour programs and all that crap. And I remember I don't know how many years ago this was, but I mean, you know, my camera phone at the time wasn't the greatest, but I remember taking a picture and I'm like, "Well, this, at least I see like some kind of winners on the field tonight," you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think if I had any shows that were like weird like that. Like, but I think it's just more bands that, you know, as someone who's obviously into hard rock and heavy metal, that you wouldn't really think I would go see. Like I went to, you know, I saw Daughtry and Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
I love Daughtry. I'm a huge Daughtry guy. I saw Candlebox on their first tour ever back in like 95. It was right after I graduated high school in 94. It was right after that. And I was kind of into the Candlebox record. Nothing I would have bought tickets for, but that one was because I had this girl that I was just crazy about, and we were friends, and she had tickets with a group of our friends, and they had a falling out. So I looked like Superman. I went and bought floor tickets.
Ooh.
And took her to the show. Got me absolutely nowhere. but so there was that, and then I've also gone to see Vertical Horizon, who I really dig. But yeah, I don't really have that weird show. Like, I mean, I almost had to go to a Justin Bieber show with my stepdaughter. And that actually, I almost had to sing Bieber in public to win a bunch of Bieber stuff. That was kind of interesting. I backed out at the last second because I was so nervous. Like even though I sing a lot, I have stage fright, but they were at the mall up the street from us. They were doing this thing where you won tickets to his movie, that first movie that came out, whatever it was, like Believe, whatever the first one was, like when he was a little kid, and it talks about how he got signed and shit. And but you got all this like t-shirts and all this Bieber crap, and you know, but you had to get up there and you had to karaoke Justin Bieber. So my stepdaughter finds out about this and just comes in the house just throwing a fit, like, "Oh my God, you have to do this, John, you have to do this, you have to do this." And I'm like, "Oh my God." So I actually learned that goddamn baby song. And
how does that go? How does that go again?
Don't get me started. it's horrible. It's like, it's, if I ever want to get a laugh at one of my shows, someone goes, "Play some Bieber, man." I actually start singing it and people are like, "Oh my God, he's like all the way through the first verse. What the hell?" But it was like, I was doing it for my stepdaughter. And at the last minute, I was like, "I can't do this. I got such cold feet." And so I went and bought her some t-shirts and took her to the movie and everything. Like, because nice. I felt bad, like I sold out on her. But, you know, and then I don't know, like maybe tomorrow night the concert I'm going to be considered kind of weird, because it's at a very small place, but it's a name that anybody who's into metal would know. I'm going to see Marty Friedman. Nice. At a place called the Grog Shop. And it might hold 150, 200 people. And, oh my God, his show is so kick-ass. I saw him last year at a similarly small place, and it's just unbelievably good. Holy crap, is it great. And the tickets were only $20.
Wow.
And I'll be like 5 feet from the guy. And it's just nothing but like a heavy metal shred fest of guitar. It's so kick-ass if you're into that kind of thing. His band is fantastic.
Yeah, so, we had talked about him a couple episodes ago, and I'd love to see that. I think today got the link to his new solo album to like review or whatever. So I'm definitely going to be checking that out.
Yeah, Wall of Sound.
Yeah, it's going to be good stuff, man. I would love to. I was actually trying to explain to the wife the other day about how he plays guitar. and because, you know, you and I had talked about it, and I was like trying to like even show her with my hand. I was like, he curves it under, and it just doesn't make any damn sense.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And, you know, like I said in the previous episode, it's, you know, he's got this other guitar player on stage who's just an absolute monster. And you're watching this guy going like, what the hell is he doing backing up Marty Friedman? And then you watch Marty Friedman play and you're like, oh, that's why. Like, oh, my God. But yeah, to see something like that in such a small venue, that's just like something you just don't pass up if you're a fan, because you never get those opportunities. You know, the only other times I've seen Marty Friedman was in, you know, the late 90s, maybe early 2000s, when I would go see him with Megadeth. And that's like, you know, in an arena.
With his solo stuff, he doesn't do vocals at all, does he? It's just like straight guitar the whole time, right?
Yeah, it's just all instrumental stuff.
And does he actually do like a Megadeth medley or anything?
You know what? I thought he would have, but when I saw him on the last tour, the only Megadeth solo that he went into, he kind of did the medley of his stuff. And in the middle of it, he goes into Tornado of Souls, because that's like everybody's everybody's favorite solo he ever did with Megadeth and stuff. So, but yeah, he didn't go into the other stuff, you know, none of the rest of Rust in Peace, nothing from Countdown or anything. It's just all solo stuff except for that one little, you know, minute and a half thing that he did in Tornado of Souls.
Wow.
So
I'm sure the place erupted when he did that too.
Yeah, oh, they went nuts. I mean, everybody's waiting for it, because that's always, you know, yeah, I know this one. So, I mean, but it really, dude, it's like, you know, I was actually texting my buddy, because he's coming with my wife and I tomorrow night, and I told him, he says, I love those small shows. They'll play for like 2 or more hours. And I said, actually, no. He went for about 80 minutes, and it was like the perfect amount of time, because when there's no vocals and it's just like a constant shred fest, after a while, it wears on your ears. And it was, to me, it was like the perfect length of show. I was like, okay, I was fulfilled. It was great. And I was just about to get to that point. Like, if he keeps going, I'm going to be like, well, I've kind of heard this for over an hour now, dude. Like, and he doesn't overstay his welcome. I mean, he really does it well. And again, the stage presence of that band, they have the best stage presence of any band I've ever seen, except for Seven Dust. I mean, they're just fantastic.
Yeah, I took my son to see Seven Dust not too long ago, and my middle son, who's 11, and took him to his first big real rock show, and it was a lot of fun, man. It was a hell of a show. They sounded amazing. Like, I've never heard a live band, I don't think, in that venue sound that good. They just sounded so good.
That band, I think, to me, and this is just my opinion, but they're the most underrated band that I can think of for stuff that I would listen to.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, I mean, there, so many bands made it that were so much worse than they were at the same time that, you know, they had, you know, when their first few records were out, you know, late 90s, early 2000s with, you know, Home and Animosity and Seasons. And it was like, there's those records, there's so many hooks on there. And there were all these crappier bands that just were blowing up in it. And, you know, they would go open for them and stuff. And it's like, God, this is so unjust.
Seven Dust had a run in there where they took out so many opening bands that ended up blowing up. Like, I think Creed went out with them at one point, and then I think they took out like Disturbed at one point, and like Kid Rock. I mean, they had like, if you opened for Seven Dust, you were about to sell a diamond record. Like, that's kind of how it went there for a long time. Actually, I did have this question for you, and this is a topic I had from the other day. Would you, you know, well, we're gonna be play musicians again, but would you rather have a band, let's say like a band that maybe in the 80s, we'll throw out like a Cinderella or something, like that could headline arenas, 20,000 seaters, 10, 15, 20,000 seaters, but only for one or two records. And then you went back down to basically playing bars for 100 people. You know, because we've seen that story many times with a lot of those bands. Or would you rather be in a band like Seven Dust, who maybe never got to that higher level, but you were consistently selling, you know, 800 to 1,000 seaters a night for an entire career over a span of, you know, 14 records?
That's it's a two-pronged answer. It would depend on what my motivations were. If I was looking at it from a financial aspect. If I was really kind of doing music just more as like a, you know, this is my job and whatnot, I would want the two monster albums and then just go play bars. Because if you manage your money right, if you have two monster records like that, if you do the legalities properly, you're making royalties the rest of your life. So you're living, I mean, like Vanilla Ice, and I don't know how accurate this is, but we played some shows with Vanilla Ice back in the early 2000s when he was doing that rap core stuff, and he said that he still makes almost $1 million a year off royalties off Ice Ice Baby. So wow. I mean, it's, so if you can do that, and yeah, it would suck knowing what it's like to play in front of 20,000, then you're just going to play for 200. But when you're still loaded and living the good life, you know, that, you know, off your residuals, that doesn't suck. But then again, if you're one of those people that, you know, doesn't have, if your ego is too big to where you can't handle the drop off, then I would say doing the 800 to 1,000 would be awesome, because at least it's consistent. You know what to expect. You're never, you know, you don't have that like empty, like 100-person thing. There's never that, oh, remember when kind of moment. So, but then again, it's also not nearly as financially secure, you would think. So.
Right. I guess you're right on the whole. Like if you played your cards right back in the day, then you could, you know, live off of it and coast off of it, and you could, you know, Vanilla Ice is a weird person to bring up, but I mean, you know, you know, now he's playing I Love the 90s reunion traveling tours and things right? like that. But I mean, you know, he's still probably making killer money doing that, and I would love to go see it. And actually, I'm kind of jealous that you got to open for him back in the back when he did his rap metal stuff, because he actually came through outside of Nashville during all that time, and I had heard about it coming up, and I called the promoter at the time, and I'm like, man, you got to get us on the bill. You got to get us on the bill. I want to open for this. This would be crazy. And he finally came back to me, and he was like, you do realize that he's just doing his rap stuff. I guess at the time you could either get him as Vanilla Ice, the metal band, or Vanilla Ice, the rapper. And I guess the guy that booked him out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, had booked him as only the rapper. And I'm like, God damn it. I wanted to open for him so bad.
Oh, it was, dude. And what's crazy is he had this drummer who was like one of the nicest guys you will ever meet, but he was the nuttiest drummer I've ever seen live. He was so kick ass. His name was Chris Antonopoulos. And I think he goes by Chris Seven now, but he was like, I mean, to open the show, like he would come out during the intro and he would get up on his drums, like on all fours, and start rocking them back and forth. And just his drums, he was just, I've never seen anybody play drums that energetically before. It was so cool to watch. And Ice was still a big star, man. And when we played with him, it was kind of funny. Like, you know, there's about like 400 or 500 people or whatever. And, you know, we stuck around and watched the show, and Ice, you know, he was complimentary. He's like, hey, why don't you come hang out with me? And we're like, fuck yeah, we'll go hang out with Vanilla Ice. So he was going to the Gold Horse, a strip club downtown. So we follow him to the Gold Horse. And they take him up to the VIP. He's like, get your asses up here. So we're up in the VIP with Vanilla Ice. And there's all these strippers around. And we're like, this is pretty cool. Like, no one's paying attention to us. But, you know, we're getting free lap dances because these chicks are just up there. So we're like, all right, this is kind of funny. People are just bringing us free drinks and everything. And then there was a guy from the Hell's Angels there. And he goes, hey, Ice, why don't you and your friends come back to the clubhouse? It's in East Cleveland. And for people that don't know, East Cleveland is like the bad, bad part of town here. I mean, it's like really bad. So, this is not meant racist, but this is honest to God's truth. White people don't go there. And if you are there after like 10 p.m. and you're stopped at a red light, police will pull up alongside you and go, get your ass out of here. Go through this light. You run reds to get out of East Cleveland if you're a white guy, because it's pretty rough, you know, racially down there. That's the kind of divide it is. So anyway, the Hell's Angels Clubhouse is in East Cleveland. So we go with Vanilla Ice, and we're hanging out with the Hell's Angels in their main clubhouse. And we're just sitting there, and they bust out this enormous bottle of Jaeger. We just sit down, and we're in like a circle. And I, you know, it's a Thursday night. I got to be at work at 8:30 in the morning. It's like 4 in the morning. And I'm like, I don't give a shit if I show up hammered on Jaeger, which I did. But, I mean, it was like the damnedest night, because Vanilla Ice was just taking us everywhere he's going. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, it was so much fun. And it was just the wildest experience. You know, what did you do last night? Oh, I played Vanilla Ice, then was at VIP at the Gold Horse with him, and then at the Hell's Angels Clubhouse. So it was kick ass, man. He was a really nice guy.
I can tell you guys are bros because you kept calling him Ice. Like, you guys are on, like, you guys still text each other occasionally.
I know. Yeah. That's just what I got used to calling him, because my guitar player, Don, the guy I was talking about during our interview with Jason, he actually wrote and produced some songs with Vanilla Ice for a record probably like 5-6 years ago or something. My landlord's got a lot of money. He actually funded it. So it was on his label. It was called Radium Records or something like that. But yeah, my buddy Don worked with Ice, and he just always called him Ice. So it's not like I know him, but I hung out with him like 3 times. We played with him, but my friend always calls him Ice. So I got in the habit of just calling him Ice. It's not like, you know,
at least you didn't just call him Rob. Like, what's up, Rob?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But, yeah. So, not trying to pretend like I know him or anything. It's just out of force of habit, because my one buddy does know him very well and worked with him and still talks to him all the time. So just a habit. So,
well, damn it. I'm so pissed now that I found out that you've opened for Vanilla Ice and I never got to. So,
yeah, but you got to open for a lot of really cool bands. One of these times I'll have to tell you about the most heartbreaking experience of my career, when we were supposed to be main support for Seven Dust and it fell through. That was horrible. That's like a dream show.
Yeah, actually, I almost have that similar story with that band, but it kind of came along to another story that I've told on this podcast. So a couple of teasers for some future talk about Seven Dust. And since we've been talking about Seven Dust, why don't we end with some Seven Dust? So I'll let you pick the Seven Dust song.
Let's see. What Seven Dust song should I pick? Should I do something obvious or not obvious?
Man, anything from like Animosity or Home?
Yeah, Animosity and Home, those are my two favorite records. Although there's some good stuff on the later ones, man. Actually, you know what?
All right.
Play Splinter right, off of Cold Day Memory.
We'll do that.
That first track, that's a kick-ass song.
All right, so next week we'll have your review of the Marty Friedman Show and make sure to see if he delivered or not. And then
delivered the goods, yeah.
And then I'm actually speaking to Kyle Baltus of 36 Crazy Fists this week, so we'll have that for you guys next week. They have a new album coming out. Man, I can't even think of the name of the album. It's actually fucking cool as shit name. Yeah, they've got an awesome new album coming out with a great name called Lanterns. I don't know. I'm a stickler for names, and that one just kind of comes off as odd. So I'll be talking to him about that. And he's been posting these pictures of, you know, because the band is from Alaska, and they I guess he went fishing with one of the dudes or roadies or something like that. And he's been Kyle's not a big dude. Like, he's probably 110 pounds soaking wet. And he's been posting these pictures of him and fish that are like the size of him. So I definitely need to find out what the hell's been going on there.
Nice.
But one of the nicest dudes ever. And, you know, like one of the random people that'll text you on your birthday. So what a good dude. So looking forward to catching up with him this week. So we'll end with some Seven Dust, and make sure to just check out TalkToMePod.com. Yeah, merch store and Patreon page, all that crap. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey.
I'm John Drake.
And we will talk to you next Thursday.
See ya.